tackling tough topics to help you think reasonably about life's most important issues. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to the third episode of our season called The Simple-Minded Society. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am the host of the Thinker Sensitive podcast. Have you ever tried to have a conversation with a haughty, dogmatic know-it-all? No one likes a know-it-all, right? He always knows what's best. If you disagree with him, you're wrong and he's right. He doesn't listen to you. He speaks to you. There's not an actual conversation taking place. An actual interchange of ideas isn't actually transpiring. He communicates in a pretentious, condescending manner, talking down to you. He gives off a pretense of objectivity and certainty through the words he uses, his tone of voice, and his attitude. But really, as a finite and fallible human being, he is pure subjectivity. Think about the news outlets in our country that profess their objectivity. News outlets like CNN or Fox News. Listen to their slogans. The most trusted name in news. Facts first. Fair and balanced. Real news. How about the objective claims of science as well? Now, I've talked about my views of science on previous episodes a little bit. I have a base trust of science. I have a base trust for the consensus opinions of the scientific community. And I believe that science is a trustworthy source of knowledge, no doubt. But I want to avoid two extremes. Distrust on one end, and deification on the other. Science can sometimes be influenced by money, by self-interest, by political or societal pressure, by biases and presuppositions, by self-desire and personal expectations, even with the peer review process. If you don't believe me, I would refer you to the work of Michael Polanyi, who is a 20th century scientist philosopher who did a lot of work in the area of the philosophy of science. There are also many other philosophers of science in the 20th century who did similar work and came to similar conclusions. Scientism, the belief that science can answer all human questions, usually objectively and with absolute certainty, is a subjective ideology and belief system that misunderstands the limits and boundaries of modern scientific methodology. It's widely believed that science is the most objective human discipline, which I'm not so sure about. It's also widely believed that scientists are completely objective. But this is a misunderstanding of human nature and the human condition. In this episode, I'm going to deconstruct human objectivism and reconstruct a working understanding of human subjectivity. I don't want to get too technical here, and so I'm not going to dig too far into the philosophical and epistemological details. But I don't personally believe that pure objectivity is humanly possible. That, of course, means that this claim itself is a subjective claim. I do believe that we can talk about various degrees or gradations of subjectivity. For instance, beliefs, viewpoints, and truth claims that have a higher level of subjectivity have a lower level of certitude, Whereas beliefs, viewpoints, and truth claims that have a lower level of subjectivity have a higher level of certitude. I think that there are certain human disciplines and fields of study that are more subjective than others. For instance, even though I don't believe that science is objective, I do believe that it contains a lower level of subjectivity than many other disciplines. And thus, it can give us a greater amount of certitude about things than some other fields of study. Immanuel Kant, someone who I've been highly influenced by, in his seminal work, The Critique of Pure Reason, gives a few examples of human disciplines that have a very low level of subjectivity and therefore are essentially objective. Two of these examples that come to mind are arithmetic and deductive logic. So the claim that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is essentially an objective claim. The proposition that all bachelors are unmarried is essentially an objective proposition. But at the end of the day, the human is still finite and fallible. To repeat some of the statements that I made in our previous season, human knowledge is geographically, temporally, and culturally conditioned. Human belief is utterly holistic, involving the intellect, the emotions, the personality, the experience, the desires, and the will of the individual. All humans interpret reality and truth through a subjective lens and read their subjectivity into the object. Kant understood this. The notion of color is a good example. Color is a subjective quality projected onto objects and light sources. All human knowledge is a synthesis of subject and object. No one gets to the object in an unmediated manner. No one retrieves the object as it truly is in itself. There are no detached observers, which is what a lot of people believe that scientists are. Knowledge is relational, involving a relationship between subject and object, whereby the subject contributes to the knowledge of the object through natural self-projection. Only God, if such a being exists, knows objectively. A being who sees all things as they are, past, present, and future, simultaneously and in eternity, outside of the subjective conditions of space and time. Only a being like this knows objectively. There are several different theories of knowledge within the history of epistemology. I'm what you would call a critical realist. I believe that truth and reality exist apart from my mind. So I believe that objective reality is real. But I think it's impossible to know for certain if or when I have accurately and fully apprehended the truth or the reality in question. So I'm a realist. I believe that objective reality exists apart from my mind, but I'm critical about my ability to apprehend it with certainty. So instead of believing in objective knowledge, I believe in degrees of subjectivity. And instead of believing in certainty, I believe in certitude, the subjective feeling of certainty. The consequences of this are manifold. All knowledge is faith-based. And there's a universal leveling of all ideas as subjective and lying on a subjective plane. However, all ideas are not equally valid. Some ideas are better than other ideas. And so we have to talk about a burden of proof. I'm against all unsupported a priori assertions of superiority. If I believe that my idea or viewpoint or opinion is better than yours, then I bear the burden of demonstrating that through rational argumentation. I shouldn't just assume that I'm right about something without any explanation or argument. The world to me represents a great competition of ideas. Some are false, some are true. Some are weak, some are strong. Some are well supported, and some are not. And despite the extreme relativism that is found in certain segments of our society, I believe that two intrinsically contradictory ideas cannot both be true at the same time. This is called the law of non-contradiction, and it's something that I affirm in every sphere of human experience and human life. For example, I can't be both 5'11 and 6'2 at the same time. The earth can't be both flat and round in the same instance. To me, objectivism and dogmatism are either the product of arrogance or ignorance. Either I'm really prideful about my ability to know things, or I'm ignorant about the human condition, about my condition. Objectivism can be the expression of intellectual dishonesty. There are times when people deliberately speak in a very objective and dogmatic manner to create a pretense that they're right and you're wrong. This is what I would call disingenuous communication. Objectivism is often the result of simple-mindedness and myopic, unilateral thinking, only seeing or representing one possibility, and then absolutizing that one possibility. Objectivism is the absolutizing of human subjectivity. And therefore, from a theological perspective, it is a form of idolatry and self-deification. Objectivism is a conversation killer. It precludes dialogue before it can happen. It's the hallmark of an unproductive conversation. Objectivism and dogmatism are often the product of insecurity, whereas humility and openness are often the expression of confidence. I think objectivism is one of the main societal problems today within the context of discourse and dialogue. When you recognize your subjectivity, you have a humble and modest epistemology. You're okay with being wrong. You acknowledge your ability to err and make mistakes. You're conscious and aware of your limitations, and you're able to verbalize this. You're open, and you're able to have real dialogue and constructive and fruitful conversations. You're able to seek mutual understanding and empathy. Acknowledgement of human subjectivity creates a real marketplace of ideas, a real public square, and a real interchange of ideas. There should be open competition and debate in a free democracy, instead of a subtle form of totalitarianism. See, dogmatism and objectivity have an autocratic nature. Let the best ideas win out, not the loudest voices, nor the ones that are most riddled with overconfidence and dogmatism, nor the ones backed with the most money, nor the ones influenced by the most peer pressure, but the most well-reasoned and well-supported ideas. Let me end this podcast with seven super concise, concrete applications. I should be quicker to listen and slower to speak. I should be willing to learn from others rather than always trying to teach others. I should be open to changing my mind. I should engage in real conversations. I should be careful with what I say and how I say it. I should question things, not just blindly accept the objectivism claimed by others. And I should recognize my own subjectivity. I should question myself. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content and wish to donate to help us grow our online community of thinkers, please visit thinkersensitive.com.